May Lord Nrisimhadev, who appeared as the enemy of Hiranyakasipu, protect me in all directions. His loud laughing vibrated in all directions and caused the pregnant wives of the Asuras to have miscarriages. May that Lord be kind enough to protect me in difficult places, like the forest and battlefront. Text 15. The Supreme Indestructible Lord is a certain for the performance of ritualistic sacrifices and is therefore known as Yagyeshwar. In his incarnation as Lord Boar, he raised the planet Earth from the water at the bottom of the universe and kept it on his pointed tusks. May that Lord protect me from rogues on the street. May Parasaram protect me on tops of mountains, and may the elder brother of Bharat, Lord Ramachandra, along with his brother Lakshman, protect me in foreign countries. There are three Ramas. One Ram is Parasaram, Jamadagniya, another Ram is Lord Ramachandra, and a third Ram is Lord Balaram. In this verse, the words Rama, Dri Kute Swata, indicate Lord Parasaram. The brother of Bharat, Maharaj, and Lakshman is Lord Ramachandra. I'm not sure why Parasaram is mentioned for protecting on top of the mountains, although one thing comes to mind is that when Krishna and Balaram were being chased by the army of Jarasandha, the Parasaram came before them and instructed them to take shelter on top of the mountain, because the mountain is a natural fort, and then Krishna and Balaram went on that mountain, so it may be related. Text 16. May Lord Narayan protect me from unnecessarily following false religious systems and falling from my duties due to madness. May the Lord, in his appearance as Nara, protect me from unnecessary pride. May Lord Dattatreya, the master of all mystic power, protect me from falling while performing bhakti yoga. And may Lord Kapila, the master of all good qualities, protect me from the material bondage of food activity. And then text number 17. Sanat Kumara Vatakama Deva.
Sanat Kumara Vatakama Deva.
Daya Sirsamam Pati Deva Hirana.
Daya Sirsamam Pati Deva Hirana.
Deva Sivarya Purusha Chanantara.
And the Supreme Lord.
Devarsivarya.
Devarsivarya.
The best of the saintly sages.
The best of the saintly sages.
Narada.
Narada.
Purusa Archanantara.
Purusa Archanantara.
From the offenses in worshipping the deity.
From the offenses in worshipping the deity.
Kurma.
Kurma.
Lord Kurma.
Lord Kurma.
The tortoise.
The tortoise.
Hari.
Hari.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Ma.
Ma.
Me.
Me.
Niraya.
Niraya.
From hell.
From hell.
Ashesha.
Ashesha.
Unlimited.
Unlimited.
Si Sanat Kumar. May Pranam. May Sanat Kumar protect me from lusty desires as I begin some auspicious activity. May Lord Hayagriva protect me from being an offender by neglecting to offer respectful obeisances to the Supreme Lord. May Devarsi Narada protect me from committing offenses in worshipping the deity. And may Lord Kurma, the tortoise, protect me from falling to the unlimited hellish planets. Purport. Lusty desires are very strong in everyone, and they are the greatest impediment to the discharge of devotional service. Therefore, those who are very much influenced by lusty desires are advised to take shelter of Sanat Kumar, the great Brahmacharya devotee. Narada Muni, who is the guide for Archana, is the author of the Nahila Pancharatra, which prescribes the regulated principles for worshipping the deity. Everyone engaged in deity worship, whether at home or in the temple, should always seek the mercy of Devarsi Narada in order to avoid the 32 offenses while worshipping the deity. These offenses in deity worship are mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. Om Vajyana Kimaran Vasya Gyanandana Sarakaya Shakshuru Nirtam Yaman Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Vadanti Svartanantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Bodha Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned, yakya dhanastapas chaiva bhavaninam manisinam, that by performing sacrifices, by giving in charity, and by performing austerities, even the saintly personalities are being purified. However, Srila Rupa Goswami is pointing out in his Pajavali that one may perform all these activities and one may become purified, but all these activities cannot relieve one from the influence of Kamadev. The only thing that can relieve us from the influence of Kamadev or Cupid is devotional service, Srila Rupa Goswami points out. And that is the key. Brahmacharya is indicating, the word is indicating, achar means behavior, and Brahma, referring to Brahman, or the transcendental reality, transcendental effulgence of the Lord, or the all-pervading spiritual energy on which everything rests, so that which is behind everything else. So the Brahmacharya basically was on the basis, on the strength of knowledge, trying to maintain celibacy by understanding that actually everything in this world is temporary and therefore not really meaningful. eternal. However, the Vaishnava Brahmachari is not performing his process in that way. The Vaishnava Brahmachari is engaging in devotional service, which gives him a higher taste. Niraharasya deena param vistari vartate. He is no longer affected. He rises above visaya vinivartante, because above the sense objects that are capturing the mind. That is really the brahmachari in devotional service. And for that matter, the grihastha, the sannyasis, the vanaprasthas, equally so. They all, every living being in the material world is afflicted by sex desire. It's said in the 8,400,000 species of life, every living being is afflicted by sex desire. So that means even the bacteria. Just to name something. So there's no way, no shortcut, there is no way out. There really is no way to escape this ongoing pushing. Rather, we have to take up devotional service. Abhendriya priti vancha tarabhavikam, krishnendriya priti echa dharapremanam. As long as we are preoccupied with satisfying our own senses, that is lust. So that goes way beyond sexual activity. Any form of trying to enjoy our own senses is lust. So therefore, the whole material world is the abode of lust, because everyone is doing that all the time, from one thing to another. So every center, everything, every act is an act of lust. Just like when you eat, on the plane, they serve the meals and they say, enjoy, enjoy. And that's it. Enjoy your senses. That's it. Sometimes it looks like people have read Prabhupada's books in the advertisements, right? And they, just say, gratify your senses. You think, okay. That looks like they took it straight from Prabhupada's books. But turn it around and use Prabhupada's books to advertise sense gratification. Sometimes I once came across a brochure of a certain Baba with fuzzy hair who is no longer on this planet. And when I saw the brochure, it was verbatim Prabhupada's Gita. The only thing was, wherever it said offer to Krishna, he said offer to me. Yeah, me, that's me, Baba. Yeah. So in this way, transcendental knowledge is also misused with lusty purposes. It is also used for sense gratification. Yeah. So it takes a major adjustment to come to the point of just working for the pleasure of Krishna, working for his satisfying his senses. Very difficult. Very difficult to really do that purely, because the tendency is, well, I'm serving Krishna to get some reward for my senses. So I'm pleasing the senses of Krishna so that I will get some benefit. That fruitive element of wanting some benefit from our activities is so deeply rooted, it's very difficult to give it up. Every action is basically mixed with that, and we bring that into devotional service as well. Therefore, even when we externally give it up, still internally it remains. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is the verse which speaks about Hridaya Kandare. It speaks about the innermost chambers of the heart, the portions of the private section of the heart which we don't share. And what is there? Our hidden material desires, the ones that are not spoken about, the ones that are not revealed, but that are there, and the ones that push us and drive us, and the ones that ultimately show in our
in our activities, although we may not directly display them, still they show in our lack of happiness, they show in our lack of commitment, they show in our inability to just surrender. It shows in our limits. This is too much. This, not this. Whereas when Krishna is in the innermost chamber of the heart, when there's no other desire, then when we're anyabhilasita sunyam, free from any other desire, then one can basically take up anything in the service for Krishna, as long as it's pleasing. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his comment on Rupa Goswami's verse, anyabhilasita sunyam, jnana karmadi anahvitam, in his comment on that verse, he points out that the basis for Rupa Goswami's verse is a verse from the Narada Pancharatra, which is sarvopadi dimirmu tam tat paratvena niyamalam risikena risikesa sevanam bhakti uchite. And he says, sarvopadi vinirmuktam, to be free from any upadi, from any designation, or from desiring to be something, from any attachment to having any position in this world, an upadi, yes, a position that we are trying to exploit for our enjoyment. It can either mean upadi, it can mean a position of fame, or it can mean a favorable position. Let's say, for example, 1 year we had a big ratiyatra in Soweto, and then they brought a TV star, to come on the stage for the ratiyatra. And when he came on, all the girls, all of them, they stand like, oh! So, I sort of, my male ego became quite moved by the whole thing, so I checked him out, looked at him, what's he got, what does this guy got, And all the girls are like, ooh! And he had a belly, he was fat, pudgy, he's a bit pudgy around the waist. I would say not fat, but pudgy around the waist. But somehow or other, the whole hype of TV, added this image and so on. So yes, like that. That's a position. That's an upadi, TV star, and with it comes the whole thing. And so on. Even if otherwise, one is a bit pudgy around the waist. Certainly not a demigod, and I thought to myself. In this way we can see the upadis. Upadi also means our capacity, all our attributes, my diplomas. Oh yes, these are our upadis. I have degrees. All of them, all the attributes, whatever we have, whether it is designer's glasses, or whether it is rings on the finger, a watch, or name it, but as Sankirtan devotees know, at least so I heard from Vaisheshika, who knows how to distribute the book, he said, flattery is the key. And whenever you distribute a book, he said, I used to think that there is you have to dose it, not too much, just sort of the right amount of flattery. He said, but these days I know you cannot flatter enough. There is no limit, and people love it. Just flatter. even when they know you're flattering, and they say, "Oh, you're flattering me," still they like it. Yes? And then he said, so if you flatter somebody for what they have, you know, oh, you have such a nice jacket, you know. Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it? You know? Yeah. I mean, that certainly works, you know. But if you flatter them for something that is part of their own body, that even comes closer to home, and that's even more powerful, that has more effect. Like that, he explained something about the psychology of flattery, which is interesting because these are all arupadis, right? These are all arupadis. Yes. So, it's like everyone has something special, something, and we're proud of it. And Srila Prabhupada made that comment, the pauper is proud of his penny. Or we saw a beggar in India with a little bundle of like very dirty black cloth, and God knows what lived in it, you know, in terms of all kinds of crawling creatures. And that little bundle was hanging on a stick which he had over his shoulder. And he was all the time looking over his shoulder to see if no one was pinching his bundle. As if people would, you know, want to steal it. Right? I mean, anybody even would want to touch it. You know? But it was his treasure. The pauper is proud on his penny. So everyone is proud on some attributes. Like in India, you sometimes, especially in Vrindavan, you see rickshawwalas, you know, doing tricks, driving on two wheels, you know, leaning over to one side and driving on two wheels. Like, wow, you know, wow, a far-out rickshawwala. Whereas in itself, rickshawwala is not exactly the most wonderful position to be in. But for a moment, when he's riding on two wheels, he thinks he is far out. Look, and everyone's looking at me, and everyone thinks I'm wonderful. See, it never crosses his mind that everyone's thinking, "Oh, look, you know, he's trying to show off." No, he really thinks he's big. So the upadis, they are so interested in the upadis, all our attributes. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the story of the young girl who's of marriageable age and, you know, well-dressed. As in India, is the practice that unmarried girls, they are allowed to dress up nicely, etc., you know, attract someone. So this girl was dressed up well, and one day she was home alone, and just then, some strangers came to the door. Two men, one was elderly, and the young one was a prince. Not a real prince, but he looked like the prince that she had been thinking about. So the young one, he was just the one that she desired. So she tried to, she welcomed them, since they were both, it was an elderly man, so it was appropriate, and she asked him to have a seat in the house as a guest, and she offered them something to eat, and then she went into the kitchen, and in India, you know, people can appreciate good quality rice, you know. So she tried to really do a number on the rice, and she had like a tray to throw up the grains into the air, so that all the impurities in the rice would come to the surface. Little pieces of wood, a piece of dal, a stone, you know, so that when you eat your rice, crunch, that would not happen. So she made everything first class. But as she was throwing up the rice in the air, the bangles on her arms, they were colliding, and they were making noise. And Then she thought, oh, he will hear this noise of the bangles and he will realize that I'm cleaning the rice myself and that we're so poor that we don't even have a servant to clean the rice. That will not be good. Then he will not be interested to marry me. So she decided to not make any noise. So she broke off the bangles. She broke off all the bangles of both arms except one. So then there was no more collision and no more noise. So this is a metaphor, the story, and it means that all our upadis, all our attributes, all those things we take pride in, that we have to break them. And only one identity can remain. Only the identity, I am the eternal servant of Krishna. All the other identities have to go. And whatever it is, I come from a special country, special, very special. Everybody comes from a special country. Just like I remember the first time, some years ago, I spoke on this team, and just then in America, the president of the United States was Ford at that time. And it was in the news that Ford's favorite snack was pig skin chips. So that's pretty disgusting, isn't it? But you can also understand that Ford, being the president of the United States, must have thought, I am number one. I am the number one in the world. I'm the most important man in the entire world. I have the best position. I'm the top dog in the entire world, number one. Maybe he's having a t-shirt with number one. Number one in the world. Yes. The president of the United States of America. Come on, what can be bigger? But then you can imagine what the brahmanas in Varanasi would have thought about it, some mlecha, and he proves it by eating pigskin chips. And the brahmanas who are too pure to even be touched by the shadow of a sutra, these smart brahmanas, they look down upon this kind of personality as being in the, being most fallen and see themselves superior. I remember when I actually was explaining this, it was to an interviewer who interviewed me just after I took sannyas. And I said that actually, from a material point of view, said, not the president of the United States, he doesn't have the best position. Not the brahmanas of Varanasi. It's actually the sannyasi who has the best position. That is the best position. Yes. Because, materially speaking, what position is better than sannyas? It's considered the highest position. I mean, why does everyone bow down to a sannyasi because of that? Because it's the best material position. But because it's the position to be free from involvement with lust in gross form, the intimate association with women, and in subtle form, pursuing any form of sense enjoyment. So it's the best position. But then, one has to even give that up also. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as we begin, Naham Vipranachanara Patiya Vivaishya Sudra, Naham Parimacha Kriya Patiya, Lopanastra Katirva, Kintu Projana Kiya Paramananda Ritabhya Gopi Pratapadaka Madhya Dasana Dasana Das. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, I'm not anything within Varnashram. I'm not a sannyasi, although at the time he was a sannyasi when he spoke that verse. He said, I'm not a sannyasi. I'm not a brahmacharya, I'm not a grihastha, I'm not any of these things. I'm just a servant. So ultimately, yeah, all the upani, sarva upani vinyantam. That is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's point. And that is the synonymous to Rupa Goswami's Anya Vilasita Sunyam, to be free of any other desire. Thus, free from any designation. Tat paratvena nirmalam. We must be free from any material contamination. So free from karma and jnana. Tat paratvena nirmalam. Srila Vishwanath says that is equivalent to Rupa Goswami's point about karma and jnana. To not be covered by karma and jnana. So, in this way, he points out that Rupa Goswami draws on the Narada Pancharatra in terms of the Siddhanta of the verse. And then Rishikena Rishikesa Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. One should then karma jnani anavritam, then one must Krishna anushivanam, one must serve Krishna in a favorable way, pleasing to him, Krishna anushivanam. So that is equivalent to Rishikena Rishikesam, equivalent to satisfying the senses of the Lord, favorable to the Lord, and that is pure devotional service. So in this way, the parallel between the two verses is complete. Yeah, and in this way, our vision is complete, somehow or other. Therefore, the key is to get very engaged in devotional service, because all devotional service is designed to please the senses of Krishna. Now the pujari is waving the peacock fan at the Lord. We can't. It's for the senses of Krishna, pleasing the senses of Krishna. So little by little, whatever remnants of desire to enjoy the material energy are left within the heart, with each time of waving at the Lord, it gets purified and destroyed. So that is our means. It's not enough to... Knowledge is not enough. It is said, matra sasra duitrava vivikseno navivikseno bhavet valavan indriyam gramo vitvam samapikarsati. That one should not even be in a secluded place with one's own mother and one's own sister, because the senses are so strong that even then it can get out of hand. Prakriti vidvamsam apikarsati, even a man of knowledge is struggling. So knowledge is not enough. The only time we are safe is when there's love, when we are actually experiencing love for Krishna, which comes from serving Krishna, from hearing about Krishna, from chanting Krishna's glories, from sharing Krishna and paraphernalia to Krishna, of Krishna, with others. It is said, that's the first word now. Padiyanam samarchanam, that was the first beginning. Lord Shiva said to Parvati, Aravanam sarvesam Vishnu Aravanam, tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. Thank you very much. It is about worship, worshipping the Supreme Lord. Even greater than worshipping the Supreme Lord is the Tadiyya. So Tadiyya is very important, because Tadiyya are the paraphernalia that are related to the Lord.
And so many things.
These are filled with mercy. One can take his bath in the Ganga just because it has touched the feet of the Lord. So there's that mercy in the form of tadiya, of paraphernalia that are connected to the Supreme Lord. And that is very accessible to us. The Lord is less accessible. Therefore, it first takes a whole purification before the Lord reveals himself. We remember Narada Muni, when he was a 5-year-old boy, served the Bhaktivedantas, made spiritual advancement, got instructions from them, was quite serious. Mom got bitten by a snake and died on the spot, but he took it in a transcendental way, left home and went into the forest at 5 years old. Quite a special boy. Practiced meditation under the tree and all these things, so in that way, and eventually got the darshan of the Lord, but the Lord then told him that this life you will not see me anymore. Because you first have to undergo more purification. So to see the Lord is not an easy thing. But the tadiyas are everywhere. They are available. The whole world is filled with paraphernalia that relate to the Lord. So therefore, we particularly, if it is said, even the worship of the tadiyas, of the paraphernalia of the Lord, are more important and the direct worship of the Lord, because there the mercy is so accessible. So we must become nectar hunters. Satyananda Maharaj used to live in Alamtoyar, not on Goloka Dham, he had this little house. People called it the gingerbread house. But in this little house, it was packed with mercy. I remember if you would come in, he had a sword of Nisrimile, which he would put on your head. He had, he had so many things. The whole house is full of mercy. So to collect this kind of mercy is very intelligent. To actually fill one's life with such sacred attributes. That is how we construct a spiritual life. Spiritual life is not just going to happen to us. I'm chanting my 16 rounds and I'm following the principles. Nice. And how do you feel? I'm struggling. That's mostly the case. I'm struggling quite a bit to somehow or other do it. Yes. Because we have to fill our life with mercy, bring in more and more from all sides. From all sides, we have to just bring in so much mercy. That will nourish us. You can feel when you come to Radhadesh, it's different than being in a big city somewhere where there's like so much Maya, and you come here, little island, actually, little spiritual island that will relieve so much spiritual influences. So we have to create. The acharyas made bhajan kutirs. They made places that were sacred where they could perform their activity. So over time, we begin to realize that that's what it takes. That it's not enough to just say, okay, I'm chanting my 16 rounds, I'm following the principles. We realize that it becomes almost impossible to maintain it unless we bring in all these elements, gradually construct a spiritual life and nourish ourselves with so many sacred associations, sacred items, pilgrimages, all these things are required. Yes, we must go to Vrindavan, yes, we must roll in the dust. We need that dust. Without doing such things, how can we be expected to last for a lifetime? Kamadev will come. And surely, and Kamadev again and again will put pressure on us and will crack under that pressure. How long can we suppress sex desire? How long can we? We need a lot of mercy, a lot of nourishment, so that we remain spiritually
enlightenment.
That is the key. So just as here, I'm going to conclude, here we're reading about Narayan, Kavacha, and there are prayers to so many deities. In our case, we just search out mercy everywhere and bring as much mercy as we can in our life. And in that way, we build a spiritual life. One year, Indrajumna Maharaj came to a retreat in South Africa, and then he brought his deities. And we asked if those are the ones that he brought in Bangladesh, and they were like a few hundred years old and related to mountains, Thakur, and so on. Very special deities. So I asked Maharaj if he could speak that evening about his deities, which he did, and then he became very enlivened. And then he got so enlivened, because he's serving those deities, right? He got so enlivened that he invited 300 devotees who were in the retreat to come the next morning for his puja. And he shared the puja with 300 devotees. And it was quite a thing, you know, to watch his puja, because he's like quite a pujari, you know what I mean? Like 16 upacharas, all these things, offering and this and that. And there was even a bhajan tape, I remember. And the bhajan tape was going from Srila Prabhupada and then up to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He had like, the tape was all composed, and it took him like all the way through the acharyas up to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and like finally to Vrindavan. And it's like you could see there was a whole meditation in the tape that played in the back. And so you put a lot of effort in this puja, and the whole thing lasted 1.5 to 2 hours. So I said, like, wow, Maharaj, that's a serious chunk of time. And he said, like, well, you know, I have to do something, you know, I have to do something, otherwise, you know, how can I maintain? I have to do something. So at the end of the day, we have to do something, you know. And whether it is puja or whether it is the books, like Dhyaneshwar Maharaj is the editor-in-chief of Prabhupada's books, and, you know, sometimes I live Maharaj in Mayapur, and then I'm teaching Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhagavatam. So I'm studying up for the chapter that I'm teaching and analyzing it and reading the commentaries of the acharyas and making notes, you know, and then sometimes we discuss it a little bit over prasadam, you know, and discussing the Bhagavatam. And then I have prepared a whole section. I just studied it in great detail, so then I know it, right? And then I say, yes, you know, in this purport it says these and these things. And then he says, yes, that is true. But in the next purport it says, and then I realize, my God, he hasn't prepared, but he knows all the purports. Right? Not just the verses, but he knows all the purports. Right? It's just incredible, really, like, from so many years just spending with the scripture. So we have to do something. You know, you can't just be on automatic pilot chanting 16 rounds, 4 regulated principles, and expect everything will be great. No, we have to make a special endeavor if we want, in devotional service, if we want to be free from the influence of Kamadeva. It ain't no joke. So any questions?
Maharaj, in our devotional service, we are ideally motivated with desire to please spiritual master. But often there is also other kinds of motivations where we try to boost ourselves. Some selfish desires are there also. Mm-hmm. So now my question is, if one finds that his motivation is not sufficiently pure, should he rather wait until it gets pure enough, or should he do it anyway despite the fact there is some mix in it?
Yeah, we find that in devotional service we are not only trying to please our spiritual master, we also try to maneuver ourselves in a position that we like. And we, you know, I like this service, I don't like that service, and so on. So we're very concerned about that, that we have a service or a position that we like. So there's so much personal motivation in our, in us. And should we wait until we can do the service purely? No, it is the service itself that will purify us. A minimum standard of purity is required for certain services. We may have some services that anyone can do, even people who don't chant or don't follow four regulated principles, like weeding in the garden or something like that. We let everybody, any volunteer can do, even if they don't follow the principles. But, you know, if someone wants to help in the kitchen, then we start to expect that they follow the principles. You don't just ask someone who's not following the principles, even to cut vegetables. So generally you have a standard, you know, maybe the emergencies, those go out of the window, but generally the standard is someone should follow the four principles before he can set a foot in the kitchen. Like that. So as the service gets more intimate, there are standards on the altar. Okay, we expect definitely that the four regulated principles, the 16 rounds, proper bath, standards of cleanliness are being maintained, and so on, and a certain amount of knowledge. So as the responsibility in service comes, the requirement is also a little higher. But as far as the state of our heart is concerned, you know, if we would have to wait for the state of our heart to be pure, then we might as well stop everything today. And I'll jump off this seat just now and fall on the ground and confess, I'm not pure. And I guess who would be able to do any service? So we're trying to position ourselves purely, and then hope that, you know, know that devotional service will pure the heart, and hope that Krishna's mercy is attracted by our service. Because, you know, the ocean of sinful activities in our heart is so great that our attempt to purify it through service is like the sparrow trying to drink the ocean. So by our service, we're trying to attract Garuda. We're trying to attract Krishna. And it's only Krishna then who can take away this ocean of sinful activities in our heart. Like that. But yes, we should not just give our service because we have some mixed motives. Service is a main key to become purified from these mixed motives.
I'm wondering about the weeds, because we have the Bhakti Lata, and then if, let's say, I'm chanting and then I think I'm the best chanter, so then I'm watering the weeds. So, but Maharaj Maharaj said that you should just continue and that will be purified.
Yes, yes, it still will be purified, the holy name. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Madhya Lila chapter 19, in the teachings to Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is speaking and explains that the bhakti lata, the seed of bhakti, is planted within the heart. Sravana kirtana jala sechana, it is watered by hearing and chanting. But along with the seeds of bhakti, there are also some material seeds that may also grow. So she gives the example of pride that may come up in chanting. And but we must also try and do some weeding then. So when we see that, you know, now I'm getting proud about my chanting, then we have to hit ourselves over the head a bit, you know, with the shoe, and say, I am such a rascal. Just see, now I'm getting proud. Of course, not too much. Some people then start hitting themselves so much, you know, I'm such a rascal, they never stop beating. That's also not the idea. A little beating. In the morning and in the evening, not all day. But some beating, you know, really, we need to try and correct it. So we need to try and stop taking pride in it by reminding ourselves, I'm not so qualified. I mean, you know, I'm just lucky that I'm chanting Hare Krishna. With how much love am I chanting? Who's the best chanter? Radharani is the best chanter. And Prabhupada is the best chanter, you know, like, who am I, you know, what's my chanting? I'm just allowed to chant. Yeah? We should remind ourselves. That's one way. Another thing about these seeds, I want to share, when you brought up the seeds, it just reminded me of one story which I just want to share. And that's a story about Gandhi and this movement. And when Gandhi was at his movement, he came out of a Brahminical background and he brought in certain Vedic elements in his political movement. And one was non-violence and another was celibacy. And so he imposed celibacy upon his leaders. So one of Gandhi's leaders was married but celibate for 20 years in, you know, separate bedrooms and like that. And but a political enemy was trying to corrupt this man and sent a prostitute. So the prostitute came as a secretary, you know, and she just took the notes, you know, kneeling so that he could look in and moving the leg in certain poses. And anyway, she did all the tricks that, according to the book. And sure enough, right, it agitated his mind. It definitely agitated his mind. It wasn't that he could just walk away from it. But he did not fall down. He never, never fell down with that prostitute. But that night, for the first time in 20 years, he went to the bedroom of his wife. And that's a very interesting dynamic, you know, like how you pick up the seed in one situation and it comes out in another. And that's very interesting because you have like devotees, they watch this movie and there's a little bit of a blue scene in the movie and they go, it doesn't affect me, I'm totally, it may not affect you now, but the seed is in the heart, right? And it will fructify later. So the first thing where we stop is in collecting seeds. Beware of the seeds. It's like, it is said that Kirtanananda used to read Mayavadi literature. That's one thing that came out. It looked like that he used to read Mayavadi literature. And later on, it came out in his philosophy, once he was a little... So, unfortunate. I don't like to speak about someone's problems, but I'm just doing it now to illustrate the same point. You pick up seeds, and you're not aware of it, and they just come out later. Later, they just emerge. So we must, first of all, be careful that we don't pick up so many seeds. It's not just the simple seeds of pride, you know, which is kind of, we've been carrying that for a long time, but there are so many seeds of sex desire that we pick up. So there is one thing in seeing things. You know, Ajami, he saw that prostitute, the sudra, and fell down. So that's what Ajami saw is nothing. Yeah? Nowadays, that's kid stuff. You know, what we have to see in Kali Yuga, that's like, stuff just embracing, you know, and come on, you know, it's like, it's nothing. Yeah. You have to see a lot more in the age of Kali. Yeah. If you go to a little bit of a wrong website, even unintentionally, there may be a little pop-up menu. If your pop-up blocker is not working, and there you go, you know. You see things that you really don't want to see. Yeah? And so on. And that's innocent. Or go on Harinam in Amsterdam, and you know, inadvertently you come past the sex shops, and if you just look in the window, you might pick up a few seeds. Yeah? So seeds are everywhere. So at least we should consciously try not to pick them up. Then the seeds that go in unwanted.
Yeah.
It is said, Prabhupada was speaking on this topic of ajamil, and he said that we've got these impressions, and also how we have so many impressions. He said, Lord Chaitanya protects us. But if we become careless, and start to just stretch the limits, yeah, then we'll pick up a lot of seeds that may not affect us today, but tomorrow may take us over the edge. So we must be careful. Yeah. I've used up the time. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.